When I think about celebrating someone who's just been a phenomenal part of our family here at Hoboken Grace, I think one of the first people that comes to mind is Mark. And for those of you who don't know, Mark is our production leader at our Uptown location. You'll find him on the soundboard there on Sunday mornings. And for years now, Mark has been serving as a part of our family. I remember when Mark first came into Hoboken Grace as a college student, and from the moment he arrived, he just had this passion to serve and to really be a servant. I remember not too long ago, he was in a job where he was finishing at 1, I think sometimes 3 a.m. in the morning on Sunday mornings from his job, and then arriving at 8 a.m. to set up our soundboard and to get things ready for that Uptown location. And this has just been his attitude the whole time of how can I give, how can I serve, how can I love the people around me. It's really amazing to see, and it's a big part of why we are where we are. And as we come to this point, we're encouraging one another. I just want to encourage you, Mark, and celebrate you. Thank you for what you've done.
Did you guys celebrate Mark's story?
I just feel like that guy in the video did a really great job of capturing Mark's story.
I know it's a little weird to come up following a video of yourself, but we're showing these across the locations, which is why we recorded them. And I would just like to thank Jeremy, who does our video stuff, for making my voice deeper on the video and making my skin much darker than it actually is. But for those of you who are with us for the first time, right now we're in the middle of this series called Ultimate Fans, and we're looking at what it means to cheer for one another. And this reality that may be very much different than what you expected when you came into a church, this reality that we believe that the God that we serve is a God who encourages, and that as Jesus Christ is bringing together this family, this thing that will eventually be called the church, that what he wants for it to be is really this place where you find your cheering section. This place where you find a group of people who are not critiquing you, but who are cheering for you. And that we're constantly moving into one another's lives and cheering for one another, encouraging one another. And one of the things that we realized as we came into this is that, one, we don't expect this of God. For very few of us do we expect this of God. For very few of us do we think that this is how God works. But then also, we're beginning to discover that we're not very good at encouraging. And even more so, we're not very good at receiving encouragement. And there are a lot of different things that keep us from being able to receive encouragement, especially when it comes to God. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been kind of working through those and breaking those down and beginning with just what we expect from him and how we see him and how we think that he operates and how he views encouragement. But then moving on from that, last week, we also saw that it's not just that, but then we really misunderstand who he's made us to be. And how, because for so many of us, we continue to associate ourselves with our mistakes and our past, that we struggle to actually receive the encouragement that he's bringing to us because we don't see it as true. We don't see it as honest because we're still associating ourselves with who we used to be as opposed to who he's now made us to be. But I think there's more to it than that. I think that there's a lot of different things that contribute to the fact that we can't seem to receive encouragement. And I think one of the main things is the picture, our picture. And what I mean by that is this. I think every single one of us, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you've been on this journey, I think almost every one of us, we have a picture of who God is. And we've kind of created this picture. And you may or may not actually picture this when you pray. And you may have given a lot of thought to this, or maybe you've just given a little bit of thought to this. But what I've found is that almost every single one of us, we have a picture. There's this idea in our minds of who God is and how God works. And we may have actually begun to paint the picture for ourselves. I remember I had a conversation with someone about this a while ago, and they were talking to me about who God is, and they began to draw this picture for me, and it was very Lord of the Rings influenced because it was like the wizard from Lord of the Rings and the long gray beard and the whole thing. And I remember
Also, a couple years ago at the church that I was part of planting before this, in our children's area, we were talking about this idea of a picture and what does God look like? What, you know, and the teachers were asking the kids, you describe for me, what does God look like? And the one kid stood up. He said, I know what God looks like. I know what God looks like. And they said, what? He said, he's dead. And the teachers were like horrified, right? Like, oh man. And they're like, oh, what's happened to this kid? Like, he must have gone through this traumatic experience. And they said, what do you mean God's dead? He's like, I know what he looks like. I see him all the time. He's dead. He looks just like this. And he had seen every picture he'd ever seen of God, every picture he'd ever seen of Jesus Christ was Jesus on a cross. He's dead. It's influenced by all sorts of things, but all of us, we have this picture. And we compile it over time. It's influenced by the movies that we've seen about God. It's influenced by the things that we were taught growing up. I remember growing up, I was a part of this one Sunday school class, and I'll never forget it. I was very young at the time, but I was a part of the Sunday school class where when you did something wrong, the teacher's response was very consistent. You know God's angry with you right now. You know God's disappointed with you right now. I remember it to this day because those words struck right to my heart, and they began to inform the picture. Because I began to see this God who was always looking for an opportunity to be angry, or who was always angry, very serious and somber. I grew up in churches that were always very quiet. You'd be very quiet in God's presence. Begin to inform this picture that I had of God. Very quiet. Unfortunately, these pictures that we have, they're often influenced by the movies that we've seen, the things that we've been taught. Often influenced by our families that we grew up in. When we hear that God comes to us as a father, for many of us, this is a very negative thing because our fathers are not a picture that we enjoy or that we look forward to. So we begin to form this picture. We have this picture. And unfortunately, when it comes to this idea of encouragement, I think one of the reasons, one of the main reasons why we struggle to actually be encouraged by God is because our pictures don't allow for it. Because our pictures are not of someone who encourages. We have this picture. But unfortunately, this picture has been influenced by all these other things and influenced very little by what God actually says about who he is. But for this reason, when we read verses like what we read a couple weeks ago in 2 Corinthians chapter 7, this beautiful passage that God is a God who encourages, 2 Corinthians 7:6, but God who encourages those who are discouraged. We read this passage, for so many of us, it just kind of bounces off because it doesn't fit our picture. And I think the bad news is that a lot of us have really, really screwed up, really jacked up pictures. But here's the good news. Here's the good news. Because a lot of you in your picture, you think, oh man, I've got a jacked up picture. Now God's angry with me. And here's the good thing. God comes to us and he says, listen, I know you have a jacked up picture of who I am. So here's what I want to do. I want to help you change it. I'm not going to get angry with you about it. I'm not going to force you to figure it out. He says, here's what I want to do. I want to help you change it. And throughout the scriptures, he's coming to us and he's doing that all the time, over and over and over again. He's coming in and saying, listen, I know you think I work like this, but I don't. I work like this. I know you think in your mind that this is what you expect of me, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do this over here. Even when you look at the passage that we've been focusing on as we've worked through this series, and you look at this passage in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, this idea that we're supposed to be encouraging each other and building each other up, just as we have been in the past, right, that we're continuing to encourage each other in that way. When you look around it, you see that even in this context, he's doing this again. I want to take you to a passage that's found just a couple verses before this. It's actually the verses right before our memory verse for the series. It's 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, beginning in verse 9. And again, he's coming in and saying, listen, I know you have this picture of me, but that's not how I work. I work like this. It says, for God chose to save us through our Lord Jesus Christ, not to pour out his anger on us. He says, listen, I understand that you have this idea that this is who God is, that he's an angry God, and he's just looking for opportunities to pour out his anger on us. He says, but that's not who God is. He's addressing the picture. It's not like this. I know that you think this. It's not like this. He says, no. Instead, Christ died for us so that whether we are dead or alive when he returns, we can live with him forever. He's not looking to be angry. He's looking to be accepting. He wants to accept you. He wants to be with you. He wants to live with you. And he comes out of this and he says, so keep encouraging each other. What are we encouraging each other with? Encouraging each other with who God really is, despite who we may have thought he was. He says, you have to understand it's not, and he does this all the time. He's trying to shift this. Look, you see God this way, but you need to understand that I don't work that way. I work like this. He's doing this throughout the scriptures, but there's nowhere that he's doing it more than he is with Jesus. And as Jesus is walking with his disciples, he says something to them that is so important. Maybe one of the most important things that he says to them in his entire time with them. To me, it's one of the most encouraging things that he says as he's teaching his disciples. I want to take you to the passage. It's found in John chapter 14. In John chapter 14, Jesus is interacting with his disciples. He's been talking to them about what the kingdom of God is like. And he's talking to them about how they can have access to God and this unbelievable access that's available to them. And his disciples are struggling with it. And then Philip finally comes to this point where he's like, listen, Jesus, if you would just show us the Father, if you just show us what God's like, if you just allow us to be able to see him, then finally all these questions would be answered. Then we'd finally be able to see like what he actually is like. And I think for some of us, especially for those of us who are beginning this journey, right, you hear me talk about this idea of a picture. And for some of us, it's clear. It's like the wizard on the seat or whatever it may be in your head. But then for others of us, we're just getting started. Or maybe there's been some things that have happened in your life that have kind of shook up your picture. And so for you, it's not that you pray to a wizard on a seat. It's that you're just praying to this giant question mark and you have no idea. And in your mind, it's just kind of this vague thing and you can't figure it out. And you just settle on the fact that, well, maybe this is just the way it's supposed to be. It's just this cloud. And I'm just kind of praying to this cloud, this God who's out there, and I can't really know him and I can't really figure him out. He's just a mystery. It's just this big question mark. Some of you struggle in silence because of that. You struggle in prayer because of that. Because how do you pray to a question mark? Like, what do you say? I don't know how he's going to respond. I don't know his personality or how he acts or how he works. It's just vague. This idea that you can't know. And some of you have been taught that that's what Christianity is about, that God's just this mystery. He's out there. And when we talk about him, we use a spiritual voice. And it's kind of like a soft whisper. And it's just this spiritual thing that's out there. And you just pray to this God. It's amazing. And you're all like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know. I can't relate to that. And then we talk about having a relationship with him. How do you have a relationship with this cloud or this question mark? It's so vague. And to be honest with you, this religion has thrived off of this. And religion teaches this. That God is out there and he's vague and he's a mystery and you can't really understand him. You can't really know him. But then there are certain people who can. Right? And you have to go through them in order to be able to get to him. There are certain people who have like special access to the mystery. And you go through them to be able to get to him. Right? Because they can see the question mark that you can't figure out. And this idea, here's what I want. Listen, if you're there and you think that is not the scriptures. That is not what Jesus teaches in any way, shape, or form. And the scriptures consistently teach that we all have access to God, but not only that we have access to God, but here's the amazing thing. Jesus comes and he says, listen. I know you're dealing with this. And God understands. He understands we have a jacked up view of who he is. He understands that we're struggling because it's like this question mark. How do I know you? How do I figure you out? And the disciples, even in this passage, they're struggling. How do I know him? If you just show us the Father, finally we could get this question mark out of our heads. And Jesus responds to him in a way that's you have to grab a hold of this. Listen to what he says. It says, Jesus replied, "Have I been with you all this time, Philip? And yet you still don't know who I am." It says, "Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. So why are you asking me to show him to you?" He says, Philip. I don't know if it was like one of those Pan moments, right? Like where, you know, what is that Hook, the movie Hook, right? Where he takes Peter Pan's face, right? The lost boy takes Peter Pan's face and he's looking at him, right? And he's like, I don't know if it's like one of those moments where he takes Philip by the face. He's like, Philip, open your eyes. I'm right here. I'm not hiding anymore. I'm not hiding. Philip, look at me. If you've seen me, you've seen him. The question mark's gone. You want to know how he acts? Watch me. You want to know what he thinks? Watch me. You want to know what frustrates him? Watch me. You want to know what he gets excited about? Watch me. And I think for a long time, we've looked at Christ, and we've acknowledged that he is God, but we have not acknowledged and realized to the extent to which he was and is God. And Jesus says, there's no mystery, guys. The mystery's over. The mystery's over. If you've seen me, you've seen him. If you've seen me, you've seen him. He's not trying to hide from you. He's trying to help you to be able to see. He's trying to change the picture. He says, listen, I know you got the picture in your head. Here's what I want you to do. Just replace it with me. Because I and my Father am one. If you've seen me, you've seen him. Which is incredibly encouraging on two different levels. One, it's encouraging because it abolishes this idea that, listen, you just can never know. No, you can. You can. As a matter of fact, he had his followers write four whole books that just talk about how he works and what he does and the decisions that he makes and the way that he treats people and the way that he talks. He has to be able to make sure, like, no, listen. And then he tells his followers, here's what I want you to do. I want you to just be witnesses of me. Just tell people about me. Tell people why. Because when people see me, they see him. Let's eliminate the question mark and let's begin to reshape this picture. It's encouraging because it takes away that question mark, but then it's also really, really encouraging because Jesus goes throughout his life and basically he takes all of these pictures that we have about God and he just begins to blow them all up. He's like, oh, nope, not like that. Oh, you think I'm going to do that? Oh, no, I'm going to do this over here. You think I'm going to react to this situation this way? No, I'm going to react to the situation this way. I'll give you an example. For a lot of us, I think when we look at God or when we look at this picture that we have of God, we see this God who's disinterested, a God who's just kind of moving past people, a God who has his own agenda and he's going to do his own thing, but he's not really interested in you. Again, this is why some of you struggle with silence when we tell you just to bring your heart to God, just bring what's going on in your life. And you think to yourselves, I don't think he really cares. Because in your head, the picture is a God who's disinterested. But then you begin to read through the story of Jesus and you see exactly the opposite. You see this guy who's becoming incredibly important, and yet it seems that he's constantly taking time out to be with people who aren't important. Let me take you to a story. It's found in Luke chapter 19. In Luke chapter 19, Jesus is on his way to Jericho. And as he's on his way to Jericho, his reputation is beginning to spread. People are beginning to crowd around him. And he does something really amazing. Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 4, it says, Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. Now, Zacchaeus was a short guy. Okay, like if any of you are really short, you get down about that sometimes. You can read Zacchaeus' story. It just shows God cares about you. I know it's tough to believe, but he does. But Zacchaeus, he's a chief tax collector, it says. As a matter of fact, it says he was a chief tax collector in the entire region, and he'd become very rich. And sometimes I think we struggle to capture what the writers are capturing when they tell us that he's a tax collector. And we're like, you know, he's a really hated guy. I was trying to think of what this would look like in our culture, like someone that we would really look down on the way that they look down on tax collectors. And I think, like, maybe a pimp. Right? And not that he has the hat and the cane, but this idea that you're like abusing people. Because in this culture, the tax collectors were those who'd basically sold their own neighbors, relatives, their own people into slavery to the Romans, because rather than trying to protect them, they just take advantage of them and basically make the oppression worse than it was before. And so Zacchaeus, he doesn't necessarily think that Jesus would be interested in him in any way, shape, or form. He probably has that very same image of God, maybe because of what we talked about last week with his past. But he wants to see him. He wants to see this guy who is different from the others. He's heard that he hangs out with tax collectors and prostitutes, and he's heard some things about him, and so he's like, you know, I just want to be able to get a glimpse of him. But he can't see over the people, so he just runs ahead of the crowd, and he climbs up in this tree, and he's waiting for Jesus to come by. He said he tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. It says, when Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. There's nothing about the story that indicates in any way, shape, or form that Zacchaeus thought that Christ would take any interest in him at all. But Jesus, as he's walking past the tree, looks up at Zacchaeus and says, hey, come here. Come here. I'm going to your house. And he invites himself to the party. Makes me feel good about inviting myself to parties. He's like, you, come down. You can make me dinner tonight. And as the story goes on, you see some amazing things happen in Zacchaeus. You see some amazing thing happen as far as Zacchaeus' future is concerned. But I don't think the point of the story is just what happens at the end. I think the point of the story is for us to be able to see Jesus, this guy who's not just moving past people. This guy who says, listen, if you've seen the Father, you've seen me. And guess what? The Father doesn't just move past people. He's interested in you. Be able to teach us that God is not a God who just moves past people. God isn't a God who defines you by your past, and that just because you have a past that's jacked up doesn't mean that he's not interested in your present and your future. He's interested. And he begins to shake up this idea of how God works and who God is. But it doesn't just shake it up as it pertains to that. The truth is that we could go through all of these things, these different pictures that we have of God. Another one, like going back to that story that I told earlier, I was sitting down with a guy, he's describing to me Gandalf sitting in a giant brown chair, and I was like, really, this is how you see God? And I mean, it's like one of the most boring things I've ever heard of in my life. And I was like, no wonder you can't pray. Like I would struggle to talk to that person too. And he's painting this picture for me. And I was like, listen, you know, I understand why you think that way, because I hear those voices in culture too. And I've heard people talk about God that way as well. But let me just introduce you to Jesus. And I began to take him to some of the stories. I said, I know you think God's boring. I know you think, but let me just take you to a couple of these stories. Let me do the same thing for you, because I know a lot of you, you probably have that idea too, that God's just this old bearded guy in this chair, and it's not really exciting at all. Let me just take you to one story in particular. It's found in Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6, it says, immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back in the boat and head across the lake to Bethsaida. Now, let me give you a little bit of context. They've been teaching. Jesus has been teaching. There's a huge crowd around them. And they finally get done. Jesus says, listen, I'm going to send these people home. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to get in the boat, and I want you to go to the other side of the lake. First thing that you need to note, right, is this word insisted. It says immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back in the boat. Why did he have to insist that they get back in the boat? Remember, I've talked to you before about pay attention to things that seem out of place or seem a little bit strange. Why does he have to insist? Shouldn't it just be like, hey, guys, we're going to the other side, jump in the boat and go? But it doesn't say they all decided, hey, listen, we're going to go. It doesn't say that Jesus had recommended that they go. It says Jesus insisted that they go to the other side. Why did he have to insist? I think you see why as the story goes on. It says, well, he sent the people home. After telling everyone goodbye, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. And then Mark continues to tell the story. He says, later that night, the disciples were in their boat in the midst of the lake rowing, and Jesus was alone on the land. So he's on the land. He's watching them there out in the lake. It says, he saw that they were in serious trouble, rowing hard and struggling against the wind and the waves. Now, I know, especially if you have a church past or church history, you grew up in any type of Sunday school or something like that. I know for most of us, when we picture this story, we picture like a little rowboat. And we picture like the disciples, like 12 guys, like crammed into a rowboat, like out there rowing. And there's like some little waves that are coming over the edge. Basically, what would terrify us if we were in the middle of a lake, which wouldn't take a lot for many of us. And that's kind of what we're picturing. I remember growing up, you read through picture Bibles, right? And there's this little boat, and there's some little waves that are coming up, and these guys are terrified, right? In the picture, and you have all these different pictures. But just for a second, let's just read the story for what it is. So read the story for what it is. He insists that they go out. There's no question. They have to go. They get in the boat. They go out. What do we know about the disciples? What do the disciples do for a living? They're fishermen, right? How much does it take to get a fisherman afraid of water? So they've been doing this their whole lives. For most of them, they grew up as fishermen. It's a family trade. They've been in a boat since they were this tall. They don't get scared in boats very easy. And they don't deal with little rowboats. This is a real boat, man. And this real boat is out in the middle of this real lake, and they're working their way to the other side, and this storm comes up, and when you look at the beginning of the story, I wonder if the reason that he had to insist is because some of the disciples were like, dude, I grew up as a fisherman, and I see those clouds over there. This isn't a great time to go out on a lake. Like, maybe we shouldn't go out right now. Jesus is like, no, dude, get yourself in the boat and go. No, we don't. But he insists, right? Like, he's like, no, go. I want you to go. So they're like, all right, fine. They get out there. This storm had to have been massive. Fishermen don't get afraid and struggle in storms. And so this storm comes up, and it's massive. And Mark says that he sees them. But listen, this is the other really cool thing about the story. Listen to what it says. It says that late that night, the disciples were in their boat in the middle of the lake, and Jesus was alone on land. He saw that they were in serious trouble, rowing hard and struggling against the wind and the waves. He says, late that night. And then listen to his next line. About 3 o'clock in the morning. You know what that tells me? There's a space of time there. So Jesus is like, oh, look, they're struggling. I'll wait. And it's not until 3 o'clock in the morning. It says, and then about 3 o'clock in the morning, he decides, well, I'm going to go out. I'll go out now. So then he decides he's going to go out. It says about 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came towards them walking on the water. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But here's the other crazy thing. And I bet many of you have never seen this before. Listen to this line. It says, he intended to go past them. He's like, oh, look, they're struggling. I'm just going to walk out. Just walk past them. I don't know. Like, what was he intending to do? Like, hey, guys, what's up? He's just going to walk past them. And the cool thing is that Mark is sharing this with us, which means that he had to have had a conversation with Jesus about it. Like, what was happening? Like, how did you? And he's like, yeah, I saw you out there late that night. I waited till about 3. I wasn't really going to stop. I just wanted to get to the other side. And he's like, I was just going to walk past you. And Mark's like, he intends to walk past us. And then you have the whole walking on water thing, which, again, influenced by if you grew up in Sunday school or even if you've seen it on TV, right? Like you see the movie about it and it's like a this like
crystal clear pond, and this Jesus with like white, like blonde flowing hair that's being like just kind of gently blown by the wind is walking across the water, right? We've all seen these movies, and like he's, but then you begin to look at the story for what it actually is. And to me, there's all sorts of questions. Because there are major waves. There had to have been major waves in order for the disciples to be worried or scared. So what was he doing? Was he like walking up the wave and down the wave? Or was he just jumping from the top of one wave to the next wave? Like how's he doing this? And he goes out to do this, and he's like, okay, I'm just going to walk past them. Just gonna make my way to the other side. They freak out. They think he's a ghost. And the story gets even crazier because then Peter's like being Peter, which is really cool in this situation because Peter's like, dude, if you can do that, can I do it? The rest of the disciples are all curled up in balls in the back of the boat, right? But Peter's like, no, I want to walk on water. He ends up, it's just this crazy situation. And you look at it and it looks like from the very beginning, Jesus set this whole thing up. He's like, all right, let's have some fun. You guys go out on the lake. Let's have some fun. And then he goes out walking. And you look at the situation, and you see someone who, to be honest with you, is anything but boring. He's like, let me show you. And to be honest with you, and you may not like me saying this, that's okay. I think he's showing off. He's like, let me show you. And if you, some of you are like, oh no, he wouldn't do that. Okay, let me tell you another story. There's another story. Jesus is at the temple, and the Pharisees are getting after his disciples because they're like, do you guys pay the temple tax? And when's the last time you paid the tax? And they're going through this whole thing, and Jesus is like, all right, whatever. Like, if they're offended about the temple tax, here's what I want you to do. And he could have just like pulled out a coin, like could have reached in his pocket, grabbed a coin, here, Peter, go pay the temple tax. He could have just like had a coin around the corner. Like, Peter, go around the corner. You'll find a coin. You can pay the temple tax. But you know what he does? He's like, fine, you want us to pay the temple tax? Peter, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go throw a line in that lake over there. You're going to catch a fish. In that fish, there's going to be a coin. That coin, pay the temple tax. He's showing off, right? Like, you could have done that. Like, that's a parlor trick. Like, he's like, oh, no, you want to do this? All right, let's do this. Let me show you who I am. And he's like, go down there, catch a fish in the fish, cut the fish open. And Peter's got to be thinking the whole time, oh, my, this is ridiculous. And he's kind of so open, and then he sees the coin. Peter must have flipped out. The whole time, Jesus is like, you think you know who God is? You have no idea. You think he's boring and stiff? That's anything but Jesus. That's anything but Jesus. But the problem is, and God sends him. He says, listen, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. But the problem is this. We come to the scriptures, and we come to these stories of Jesus, right? And God's trying to help us see, this is how I work. But rather than reading them for what they are and allowing them to help us understand him, what we've done is we've taken how we see him and we've read that into the stories. And so for a lot of them, we've missed it. I'll give you another example. There's a story in Jesus' life where Jesus, the parents are bringing these kids to Jesus for him to pray for them. And I was just reading the story to my kids the other day, and they have like a little picture Bible, like a kid's picture Bible, and you flip to the story of these kids coming to see Jesus, and the disciples are basically everything that we think God is. They're angry, judgmental, they're short, they have short tempers, and these parents are bringing these kids to see Jesus. The disciples, because they're all angry and preoccupied and not interested with the people around him, they're like, no, he can't be bothered with this. He's too important for this. He doesn't have time for this. He's got an agenda. We got to conquer the world, and we got all these things to do. He can't be bothered with these kids. And Jesus is like, no, come on, bring the kids, right? And in this picture Bible that my kids have,
There's a picture of this. And maybe some of you, if you grew up in Sunday school, you've seen pictures of this, or you read through the story and you picture this yourself. And in this picture Bible, there's like five or six kids like sitting on Jesus' lap, and he's got this nice smile, and they got these nice smiles looking up at him, and he's praying for them. It's just like this very like calm thing, right? I used to picture that situation that way too. You know what happened? I had kids. You know what doesn't happen with kids? Five kids sitting on your lap looking up at you like, oh, I don't care if you're Jesus or not. That's not the situation. Kids are crazy. They're pulling his hair, right? We had a child dedication a couple weeks ago. You bring kids on stage, we're going to pray for them. You have no idea what will happen. Well, this is funny. We had a child dedication earlier this year, and these kids were on stage, and one our Uptown campus pastor, Anthony, he's praying for one of the kids, but there's another kid behind him. And this other kid behind him, if you watch it on, you can watch it on live stream. I don't remember what week it was. But as Anthony's praying, the kid just grabs onto Anthony's butt. Like, just grabs his butt. And Anthony's like, what? Right? That's what you're talking about. You're not talking about this serious, somber, like, oh, he's praying for the kids. These are kids. This is crazy. But we've taken our idea and our picture of God, and we've laid it over Jesus' stories. And we missed it. And Jesus is like, no, stop. Just look at me. Look at me. I'll show you how he works. I'll show you how he works. I'll show you him. If you've seen me, you've seen him. It's not a question. I think a lot of us, we struggle with being encouraged by God because we still see the question mark. Here's what I want you to do today. Take the question mark. Leave it here. Leave it here. And you walk out of here today with Jesus. Leave the idea that you're building this relationship with the question mark here. And you walk out of here and build a relationship with Jesus. You build a relationship with Jesus. One of the reasons why I want you to be reading through the scriptures and reading through his story is so that you can know him. And you can know him. You can know him. He's not hiding. He's not trying to make it difficult. And I want to encourage you as we walk through this, if you haven't read the scriptures before, or maybe you're sitting here and you're thinking to yourself, no, you know what? I've taken my idea and I've read it into the story. Stories. I haven't allowed them to be what they actually are. I want to encourage you to go to the book of John. If you're just beginning to read through the scriptures, you can find John in the beginning of your Bible. You're going to see a list of all the books. He'll tell you what page it's on. Just go to the book of John. It's written by one of Jesus' best friends. His name's John. The Bible's really creative with titles. And so you can go to the book of John. You can begin to read through the story of Jesus. But don't try as hard as you can. Try as hard as you can to take the picture that you have and just leave it here and just start fresh, start from scratch and just say, okay, listen, I'm just going to let Jesus tell me who God is and how God works. I'm going to look to him because he told me that I've seen him, I've seen the Father. And I'm going to build a relationship with him. I don't know about you, but the idea of building a relationship with this God is not exciting, but the idea of building a relationship with Jesus is awesome because I love this guy. I love it. You see how he works and what he cares about and what he doesn't care about. It's amazing. It's amazing. You're like, I don't know if I'd follow this God. Jesus is like, no, stop. If you've seen the Father, you've seen me. And follow me. Follow me. I'd follow him. I'll follow him to the end of the world. Change the picture. And don't make up the picture yourself. Put Jesus right there. Begin to read through the stories. Don't read it like a Westerner, like, oh, I didn't get anything out of verse 4 of chapter 3, so I think I'm going to quit reading the Bible. Like, you're not supposed to get something deep out of every verse. I don't know why we have this idea. Like, just read through the story. Read through the letter. The Bible wasn't written that way. Like, oh, I'm going to study chapter 4, verse 5 through 6, and then I'm going to have a life-changing moment. No. Like, it was written as letters that were usually read, like, large portions of them to the church at a time. Oftentimes, the whole letter was written to the church. And so just read them that way. Stop trying to break it all down and just read through the story of Jesus and just ask yourself, okay, how can I, rather than getting everything I'm supposed to get out of this, I just want to get to know Jesus from this. I just want to get to know Jesus. And see how he works, see how he operates. Jesus says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. The bad news today is that unfortunately, almost all of us have a jacked up picture of who God is. But here's what I want to encourage you with. Jesus didn't ask you to serve a mystery. Jesus didn't leave it to chance. Jesus came and said, no, I'll show you. I'll show you. And then you follow me. You can know him. He didn't come to pour out his anger on you. He came so that you could be with him forever. He wants a relationship with you where you know him as well as he knows you. That's amazing. That's amazing. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you. Thank you for the way that you you're constantly working to break down that picture in our mind, constantly working for us to be able to clearly see you. How you're constantly working in the lives of those of us who to be honest, we'll never be able to understand the fullness of who you are, but you're working to be able to give flesh to it, that you became one of us so that we could, in our own flaws and in our own limitations, be able to actually know you, to understand you, to experience you. Father, I pray that as we walk through the rest of this service, Father, I pray for those who are here who have that picture. I pray that they would leave it here. I pray that if we've allowed anything else to define you for us other than Jesus, that we would leave it here and that we would begin to pursue you. That we would experience the joy and the freedom of coming to know you, Jesus. Of walking with and following you, Jesus. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.